So, as Gil likes to say, so, wise mindfulness includes the receptive quality of simple awareness. Clear comprehension adds a sharper, more thorough, fuller seeing of things as they are. It's a little like looking at an object in a dim room. We see it, but if we turn on a light, it becomes much clearer and sharper. Some years ago, I was with a couple of friends outside of the De Young Museum in San Francisco, and there's a pond there, and kind of in the middle of the pond, there's a little island with little plants and things, and we noticed these two beautiful large turtles resting on the island. And we were just admiring them. They look so beautiful. And then one of our the other friends said, "They're not real, they're sculptures." And at first, he said, "Oh, it can't be, but he was so confident we were convinced. And until the first turtle jumped into the water. And in a similar way, this happens to us a lot. We can pay attention to the moment without seeing, really seeing what's going on. But when we're not distracted by the chatter of the mind, by the ideas and beliefs we have about things, then we can actually see what's really present, not what we think is there. So clear comprehension can include the simple recognition of phenomena, just like we've been doing in our sittings, recognizing that's a sound, that's pressure, that's warmth. But it can also include at different times when it's appropriate, context and discernment. For instance, if we're sitting in meditation, we might be clearly hearing sound, simple sensations we recognize. But we might also notice a persisting, repetitive sound, and clear comprehension might clarify for us that it's raining, and it might be good to close the windows. So over the next few days, we'll be discussing these four different kinds of clear comprehension. Today I'm going to begin with clear comprehension of purpose. And then we'll follow with suitability, pasture, and non-delusion. One definition of purpose is the reason for which we do something. Clear comprehension of purpose is understanding why we do what we do. The Pali word for purpose is atta. So it's atta sampajana. Atta comes from the Sanskrit artha, purpose. Like you've all heard Siddhartha, the name of the Buddha, which in Sanskrit means one who has accomplished one's goal. Siddha means accomplish, and artha means goal or purpose. So in this practice, this clear comprehension of purpose points to a refining of our purposes and intentions in the service of awakening. In a way, all wise purpose is a movement towards freedom. We can do the same actions with different purposes. For instance, we might go to the store for the simple purpose of buying food. We need it for dinner. We do what's needed. We buy what we need. Or we might have the purpose to buy food as quickly and efficiently as possible and get it over with so we can check it off our list and get back to the real business of meditation. Or it might be buying food so we can nourish our families. All three ways of buying food might end up buying the same food, but the quality of heart can be quite different. This clear comprehension allows us to see that difference. We notice the warmth and happiness it brings us when we're shopping to nourish our families. Or we might notice the tension we feel as we rush around to get it over with. It gives us a sharpness of vision to see what attitudes are helpful to nurture and what qualities we might let go of. Both in daily life, or in the moment-to-moment practice of formal meditation. You know, this path, one way of viewing this path is like it has two wings, you know, the path of letting go and the path of cultivation. And so we nurture, we cultivate these wholesome qualities of the wholesome intentions of the Eightfold Path. Non-harming, goodwill, renunciation. The renunciation is the other side, is the letting go. So we can cultivate letting go and we can let go. We have many, many purposes in the human life. One way of thinking of them is long-term purposes, mid-term, and short-term. In our daily life, we might have a long-term purpose, such as getting an education, raising a family, learning a skill. It's the vision of our purpose that keeps us going to school every day, even when we don't feel like it. Or if we want to run a marathon, it's the vision of the goal that keeps us running every day, month after month. Now, a midterm purpose might be to run every day this week. And a short-term purpose might be just to finish this one lap. So in a similar way, connecting with our various purposes and intentions can apply to our spiritual life. A long-term purpose can be our inspiration for practice, our highest aspiration, some form of being inspired by the idea of freedom, of liberation, of living without struggle, without striving, without resistance, or maybe having a heart that radiates unconditional love and compassion. A heart that doesn't need to protect itself. We might view it as our being free of greed, hatred, and delusion, or some version of this. We may want to ease the suffering in this world we live in. And at different times in our practices, the way we consider this aspiration, the way we think of it, might shift. And a different way of thinking about it might be what inspires us. Even though, essentially, they're all the same purpose, letting go of clinging, freedom. Long-term purposes tend to be general, a general intention like awakening, being free of suffering. It can be helpful to periodically reflect on this, to keep it alive in us, close to us, as it guides and inspires us in our specific intentions. Or midterm purposes might include more specific goals that follow from our long-term purpose. For instance, in daily life, we might have a purpose to use wise speech to not gossip, or to meditate every day, or maybe to not react with anger. At the beginning of the retreat, maybe we have a goal of developing concentration to help us stabilize the mind and see more clearly. Or maybe we have the intention to be more kind to ourselves. Some of you wrote some of these things down in your questionnaires. And for the short term of a meditation period, we might aspire to stay connected with each breath, or to do so with an attitude to stay peacefully connected with each breath. Or if we're not seeing clearly, we might have an attitude that we need to succeed in getting concentrated, and that if we don't, we're failing. It's important to see, to clearly see these short-term intentions that color our practice. We might spend hours each day watching our breath, but if we're doing it with unwholesome attitudes, we reinforce those qualities. And we not only reinforce them, but we're at odds with our long-term aspiration to be free. If our purpose is to climb a mountain, then we hike the path to the top of the mountain. But if we forget our purpose, forget that it's our goal, we might partway get distracted by all the interesting things on the path. Maybe sit down on the trail or just turn around and go downhill since it seems easier. It's our sense of purpose that keeps us going to the top, making the choice again and again to continue to go up, even when our legs are tired or the body feels warm. And we may appreciate the vistas along the way, or the feel of the ground against our feet, or the wonderful birds or animals we meet. We might greet them with delight, but then we still continue to the top. These three purposes can support each other. For instance, the long-term aspiration of awakening, developing concentration as the mid-one, and staying peacefully connected with each breath, they all support each other. They all align with each other. They're all in the service of the long-term aspiration. Or we might contract around an attitude of accomplishment, where the aspiration of our purpose to be free of greed, hatred, and delusion is lost. And we cling to the attitude, I'm going to stay with that breath no matter what. I'm going to succeed. And when we do that, all we do is reinforce greed, hatred, and delusion. When our three purposes are aligned, there tends to be a resonance, an ease. When they're not aligned, there's a sense of dissonance. We might contract with effort, with striving, get overly serious. That's when I know I'm in trouble, is when I get overly serious. Get critical, judgmental. Our purpose is no longer to stay peacefully connected with each breath. It shifted to striving. As we practice moment by moment and things slow down, clear comprehension highlights any dissonance in our attitude. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to reflect on it at that level. It just becomes clear that something isn't quite right. Our attitude isn't quite right. It shows any misalignment. Our intentions, when the mind gets quiet, they just stand out in clear relief. They just show up when we get quiet enough. And we can see when we add something unnecessary to the moment. Going back to daily life, I first became aware of the power of having a clarity of purpose when I was in my 20s and I got involved with the human potential movement. One of the primary teachings in the group I was involved with was the power of setting goals and following through with their actions. The idea was expressed by a large circle with a clear border around it, very firm black border. Everything inside the circle is how most of us live our lives. We mostly live in the central comfort zone, where day in, day out, we tend to do what we're comfortable with. But that comfort zone has an edge. And to grow, you have to stretch yourself beyond the edge. And to realize our goals, to accomplish our goals, we have to go outside our comfort zone and do what's needed, regardless of being uncomfortable. This resonated really clearly with me. And I shifted my life to accomplish the things I wanted to accomplish. And for quite a while, it was quite useful to me. And then one day, we used to have these little advanced seminars, about 50 people, and we were given an exercise. We're supposed to mingle around the room, and I think they would, you know, click a bell, hit a bell, I think. And then we'd stop in front of whoever we were with. And we were supposed to tell them something we wanted that we didn't have, something we wanted to create in our lives that we didn't have. The idea was that by clearly stating what we wanted, it was the first step towards getting it. And one man said to me quite proudly, "I want to buy a tuxedo and I want to have a reason to wear it." And something happened in me. The kind of the frivolousness of the desire suddenly made it clear to me that there was something crucial missing in the whole approach of chasing everything we want, chasing what we want. And I realized that for me, why we want what we want was essential. In meditation practice, we might want to develop concentration to have a powerful experience. And, you know, I've had powerful experiences. They've been wonderful. Or we do so as part of our movement towards freedom. And that's really the aspiration for practice for me. These experiences are experiences. They come and go. The attitude needed in developing this practice needs to reflect the peace and freedom of our purpose. In my early retreats, on the day of my practice discussions with the teacher, I would double down on my efforts. I wanted to impress my teacher, show them what a good meditator I was. It took me longer than I'd like to admit before I understood the foolishness of that purpose, how it was at odds with the intention to be free. I was able to see the dukkha, the suffering inherent in clinging to that desire. I want my teacher to think I'm so great. And as I started to see this intention clearly, the desire didn't leave, but something in me realigned itself to something more wholesome, more helpful, including to hold these painful parts of myself with compassion and kindness. eventually did leave. But it wasn't from seeing it the first time. It wasn't from seeing it the 100th time either. Developing this clear comprehension of purpose and sharpening the mind includes seeing when our purposes are immature, unskillful. For instance, we may have the wish to connect with someone. Talking can be a beautiful way to communicate with another human being. But if a disagreement arises, we might get caught in an argument, and we can lose touch with our purpose of connecting with them. We forget they're our friend. Our purpose can quickly change to win the argument. One of the things that that I've heard and said is many of us would rather be right than be loved. And we often act that way. Our attachment to view can prevail over any wholesome desire to connect. When we cling to what we want, like wanting to win the argument, the emotional response we have is actually very similar to the tantrum of a child, and just dressed up to appear a little more sophisticated. And I actually find that helpful. Because when a child has a tantrum, I usually tend to feel pretty affectionate towards the child. That's how kids are. My mommy's better than your mommy. I want that. I want that ice cream. And if not, I hate you. These very raw clingings, they're so honest. And so for me, that, just really seeing it that way, it's like, it's okay. This, my little four-year-old's coming out right now. It's okay. I love you. And the reason that's so important is because one of the things that we do in this practice is a unification of who we are. It includes every part of ourselves, all of who we are at any given moment. It includes every scrap of insecurity, of every scrap of anything we may not we may wish was different in ourselves, anything that's not perfect. It includes all the wonderful qualities we have, every part of ourselves, and that's what gets awakened. It's all of us gets awakened, not just these little select pieces of us. At different times, different ways of approaching a clear comprehension of purpose are appropriate. And these are a little bit of different capacities of clear comprehension in the mind. For instance, when we consider or long-term purpose, reflective thinking can be really, really wonderful. I think Gil talked about that the other day. To go for long walks and consider what are we doing with the practice? Where are we going? What really inspires it? What moves us? To touch a deep honesty in ourselves. Sometimes it's helpful to sit in the garden or in nature, or just sitting by the window looking out and just allowing the mind to reflect on our values, on what's important to us. It's a process we can develop with care, and we can have our entire lives guided by this deeper purpose. It guides our lives and forms our lives. I like to differentiate between formal meditation and time to reflect like this. I don't want to encourage you to spend a lot of time reflecting and thinking on this retreat. These retreats are such a precious opportunity to delve so deeply into our experience. It's helpful to not encourage a lot of discursive thinking. Another way of approaching a clear comprehension of purpose is with affirmation. For instance, before formal practice, such as the beginning of the day on retreat or any formal practice period, it can be helpful to connect with our intention to remind ourselves why we're doing what we're doing. For instance, in one particular retreat, I noticed how much my habit of striving in practice was tensing me up. I just kept bearing down in my, on the breath, just trying so hard. So I began each sit with a brief, gentle affirmation. May I be happy? May I be peaceful? Just that, just connecting with that intention. So that as I approach my breath, I approached it with peacefulness, with happiness, contentment. And the affirmation is the guide for myself. Again, it's not a lot of thinking. It's just a little touch, a little, that's the direction. And as we get closer into the moment-to-moment practice of mindfulness in the formal sitting or walking meditation, it's clear comprehension is the much more subtle touch of investigation, where we can see clearly if the way we're paying attention is helpful or not helpful. And discursive thought isn't needed at this level. And we can see very easily if we look carefully, maybe the mind is curious and interested in the moment, or maybe it's trying to make something happen. And as the mind gets quieter, investigation makes it clear. A curious mind feels harmonious. When we're trying to make something happen, there's a tension there, a lack of openness. And it can become clear that it's not a helpful attitude. And we can make the subtle inner choices that are forward leading towards peace instead of agitation. Choices that lead to relaxation instead of tension. Towards a vibrant, clear seeing instead of a dreamy mind. By continuing to make these helpful choices, we're conditioning our mind to make more helpful choices. When we make unhelpful choices, like running to fantasy, running to worry or remembering the past, we condition those tendencies. When the mind is quiet enough and clear enough to see that moment of choice, we can choose to meet the present instead of a temporary comfort. And when the now is difficult to be with, either painful physically, mentally, or emotionally, the intention to show up for life, however it is, can foster the strength needed to meet the difficulty. To stay with it, increasing our capacity to be with what's challenging, to stay open with what's challenging. or capacity to stay on purpose, to stay motivated, is actually similar to develop our capacity to keep our attention on the breath. It's easy to feel motivated when the practice is enjoyable and seems to be going well. We can easily feel motivated at times by strong suffering. I've known people who rededicated themselves to their practice after a major loss or challenging diagnosis. Probably some of you here. Our habits of mind literally create grooves in our brains. The more we practice something, the easier it is to drop into those grooves. The mind is used to it. It's called facilitation. This is a place where the practice can feel as if it's against the stream of our deepest habits of mind. So we can begin sitting with the intention to stay present, to open to what shows up, but within minutes, the mind has gone on an excursion. On retreat, as we keep coming back and coming back, the mind begins to slow down, and then we more easily notice the hindrances that are the trigger for these excursions of mind. And gradually, we can build the capacity to meet those hindrances each time they show up. If we're having an unpleasant experience and aversion arises, we can develop the habit of turning towards it instead of pushing it away. Ah, this is what aversion is like. But if we run back to the breath as quickly as we can, we might miss developing this healthy relationship with the hindrance, with getting to know it, with understanding it. And as the mind slows down even more, we can meet the unpleasant experiences that show up without resisting them, without rejecting them. It's this capacity to be with the difficult that's one of the supports in developing our ability to stay motivated, to stay on purpose. As those of you who've been practicing for a long time, maybe you've experienced both, the practice of feeling alive and energized, and at times feeling like slogging through mud or walking through thick fog. I know practitioners who would stop practicing when they got sick. They would say they're too sick to practice. But developing the capacity to be with whatever shows up really means whatever shows up, including feeling like we're slogging through mud. Can you slog through mud with a peaceful heart? Can we walk through a thick fog with a warm, kind heart? Maybe all we can muster at those times is a weak, yes, this too. Just a little bit of a yes, okay. This practice turns towards the difficult without being in conflict with it. Developing a great capacity to meet and hold our own suffering and the suffering of others. And the wonderful thing that happens as we develop this capacity, we find that the larger our capacity to meet suffering grows, the larger our capacity for joy and peace. And we can meet that too. Ah, this is what joy is like. Yes, this is what peace is like. Clearly seeing our purpose at any given moment allows us to see if it's beneficial or not. Is it an intention of letting go? Of not harming? Of goodwill? Connecting with a beneficial purpose energizes us. It gives us a clear direction. In the larger long-term sense and in the moment-to-moment sense. As mindfulness deepens, we begin to see the motivations that lead our minds to be hijacked by the hindrances. For instance, a common one is when there isn't much stimulation in the mind, to state we often call boredom. Maybe you're familiar with it. Instead of recognizing the fact that there's an unpleasant nature to boredom, we turn away from it. We might turn away from it, forgetting our purpose of mindfulness. And we might choose instead to entertain ourselves in fantasy land. But as we return to awareness again and again, we begin to see these movements of mind and not get swept away by them. We begin to clearly see what is path and what is not path. And as we choose path again and again, it moves us deeper into practice, forward leading towards freedom from suffering. So thank you. And I'd like to end with a few minutes of silence. And I have one announcement. There'll be a drop-in group tonight with Gil at 7:15. The link is on the schedule. So you're welcome to drop in. Thank you all.